after about 1960 or 62, the longshoremen decided they'd like to have a better image in the community. So some of the things that they did were go into the sponsorship of bowling, soccer, baseball on a little league level. Then they decided they'd get more active themselves and get into, instead of industrial leagues, but to get into city leagues, something that would draw a little bit more attention. So by that time it was the middle 60s, and they sponsored their own ball clubs in basketball and baseball. And we won two or three championships. And some of the guys that they acquired were local athletes, such as Bob Sprague that played for UPS, and Roger Coleman, myself, Pat Kelly. And then we had a long period where the registration was frozen. Some of the guys were on the B bench for as long as 7 years, and during that time, this attitude subsided. Our relationship with the port seems to be ideal because they're not members of the PMA, and we're able to get the port to take a chance on any cargo that comes in, not being necessary to make a large profit, whereas opposed to the stevedore company that has to make a large profit. Our relationship is more of a arm in arm, or we'll do what we can, or we'll improve it, or we'll get it now and improve it later.
Like if there was something you wanted to say that you felt, was too personal, or, about somebody you didn't want them, or something like that.
Well, it seems that, that we've gotten away from that now, and the relationship is not as good with the port as it had been 10 years ago. Because they're more interested in a guarantee of a certain amount of money per square foot of area. In other words, if they can subcontract it out to a stevedore or to anybody else and make a guarantee of a certain amount, they're not as willing to gamble on us or themselves as they were 10 years ago.
What do you think causes that? I mean, why are they less willing to gamble now than they were?
I think the management, because we had a manager that was a builder, and now we have a manager that seems to be more interested in, not exactly records, but he seems to be more interested in an increased growth in the port's earnings rather than the tonnage. I've actually seen where they, drove couple of cargoes out of here that they could have made a profit on, such as the hardwood, and I think they've given some land to like Domitar for one. That was a lot of area that could have been.
Is that the new gypsum?
Yeah, it'll be a one ship a month at the most, maybe less, compared to the with a small amount of guys working, as compared to like hardwood had been. Many more ships with a larger crew, and we don't do well with steel because we don't have a real good facility for it. It's not entirely their fault. And then when they changed this ore operation, they've made Portland much more competitive than they ever were, because they've changed the manning to where the stevedore company has to increase their bid on a ton of ore to cover the crane prices, which increased drastically, and also the dock support, which at one time was covered by the port, is now has to be covered by the stevedore company. So their bids have got to go higher, and that makes the other ports, such as Portland, that has a good facility,
Is that just an ore you're talking about? Well, I'm just,
not just ore, but hardwood and steel products and ore also. They put the crane in. They put the scale in, and that was quite an expensive item, probably $100,000 or in that area. And I guess in order to get their money back as quickly as they can, they changed the operation, which caused the stevedore to bid higher. Mm-hmm. And they're still making their share of the per ton coming across their docks, but they've increased the stevedore costs because of the cost of the cranes and the fact that the port once covered the support, which is the checker, the supervisor, the blocker, the bull driver. Now that has to go to the stevedore and they have to pick that up, so they have to bid higher. Well, when you get a higher bid, your competitors, you know, are going to move in on your opportunity.
So there's a tension between the ports wanting to make money or not lose money, whichever the case may be, and and the unions need to have operations that create jobs, in a sense.
Well, for example, meat and rubber would never have been in this port now if it hadn't been for the fact that the port took a chance and probably lost some money initially until we could get the thing down pat to where we could make money for them. But they don't seem to be willing to take that type of a gamble anymore. They want to guarantee they're going to make, you know, a certain amount, and so I think it's changed. And the only change I can see is that it's in the management. The attitude is that the one attitude was that we're building a port, and the other attitude seems to me that we're showing the community, which is a community owned or the stockholder or whatever, that we're making a greater profit.
I'm thinking that maybe the poor economy we've been having maybe makes them fearful they wouldn't be able to get tax money if they wanted to do something.
They can show you an increase in jobs, but they're not in our field, they're in somebody else's field. I'm sure that the waterfront's probably continued to grow in number of jobs. You know, I can remember when we had one sweeper, now we got probably 15 or 20 guys that work on that operation, and engineering, there used to be five of them up there, now they got a whole goddamn building full of them. So I'm sure that there's more job, there's many job-related jobs in the port, but it's come from my area and gone into some other area. Teamsters are more active in the flats now than they were. I mean,
what's that? Is Pacific Storage moving?
Pacific Storage are they've moved.
Because I thought I started driving by, I noticed one day a big sign that the building was for lease.
Are you talking about the one over in Milwaukee now? Or are you talking about
the one in Port of Tacoma?
I don't know. I don't think they are. I thought they had moved into on Port of Tacoma?
Yeah, on Port of Tacoma Road.
I mean, back in behind the bank
there? Yeah, right there by Concrete Tech.
Yeah, no, I didn't know they were moving. I thought
there's
had a brand new...
There's a big sign that the building's for lease.
Oh, yeah?
The site for lease. Right smack in front of it. There's still trailers in there.
There's an area between the new bank and that that's... gets about $4,000 a month rent from the port. And we would love to have it for a building site, but they're doing so well, and the guy's doing nothing but holding it, that we can compete with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's other areas, you know, for sale as well, but they want, like, right next to Concrete Tech, there's 4.8 acres for sale, and they want about $100,000 an acre in there, and then there's right at the end of the rail head by the next cross street from the Milwaukee, there's an area in there that's owned by the city, but they want 52,000 an acre, but they want to sell the whole damn strip. We'd love to have 2 or 3 acres in some area around close, but we can't get it.
You say the Teamsters are more active in the flats, so what stuffing?
Well, no, because of because
new stuffing terminals.
Take both St. Regis and the smelter. They don't. They aren't actively shipping out of the smelter and out of the Milwaukee now. What they're doing is they're storing and then bring it over to Pier 7 or wherever they want to ship out of. We don't get a whole lot of St. Regis anyway. They send a lot of their pulp to Everett. So, Teamsters are hauling for them, of course.
So what you're saying is that what the port should be doing is building facilities that could handle those commodities?
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that, you know, the jobs are here, the same number of jobs are here that were here,
mm-hmm.
but they're not in our, in my industry, they've, you know, they've gone to, you know, part of them have gone to, in other words, when a guy like a port commissioner who has something to do with the whole, like Cotton, when he ran for re-election, he can say, hey, in my period, there were 800 new jobs in the waterfront, but there weren't 800 longshore jobs. There were there were 600 and probably 90 of them went somewhere else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or as the port decides to lease, you know, they switch Cascade Pool from here over to the river. They traded Milgard out of something into something else, you know. And then these people have built in the area. I mean, from what I understand, they could take, right overnight, you could sell all the land on the flats if it was for sale, because a lot of outfits would like to come in, but they're not waterfront related. That, you know, you could, you know, the land they had would, they could sell, you know, and they'd be out of the business of leasing land. But, for example, the Milwaukee was engineered to be the best deep water facility left on the whole West Coast for a major operation, such as, say, Sealand or someone like that. A big outfit wanted to come in.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room anywhere else but here. But that room could be gone overnight if the port would change their attitude about selling. You know, they want to lease, they don't want to sell anything, and they want to, they're trying to save a piece here for the future. What if they just said, hey, well, we'll bust it up to any nut and bolt outfit. They could probably sell all the land that they have left just, you know, virtually overnight, but maybe these outfits they sold to would never have a damn thing to ship.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, so they're saving, you know, some areas, or most of the areas, for, you know, water transportation type businesses. Well, and I can't knock management for that. That's, you know, that, that's the other, that's their side of the argument, which, you know, I'm glad that they, you know, they're, I just don't agree that, making money is more important than building the port.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to be the difference between the management we have now and the management we had.
Has this meant any changes in the sort of day-to-day relationship between, you know, just on the docks and loading and unloading or in the warehouses?
We work for ourselves. The guys that are our walking bosses and foremen are guys that came through our system. So we don't see a day-to-day. The average guy working on a ship, he doesn't get to see anything different. But I think checkers and supervisors see a lot. They're forever trying to cut, you know, back. They have, I don't know how many superintendents they have, but, you know, they have a lot of superintendents that do the hiring. What I mean by that is, like, the day before, they say, hey, you're going to need a checker, a supervisor, a foreman, and two bull drivers and a blocker over at one tomorrow. One's not an active pier. It's some days it runs, some days it doesn't run. Well, maybe the foreman that the guy gets might say, hey, I'm going to need, you know, three bulls. And he doesn't have the final say on that. You know, maybe by 10 o'clock in the morning, if everything's so congested and I'm getting too much, the superintendent might say, well, you were right.
Mm-hmm.
But in the past, you know, we had a foreman or a supervisor in each one of those areas, and they were pretty much up on what was coming and going, and they would order, correctly, you know.
Is that
now
the difference between the stevedore company having to do all that work and the port having done it in the past? The stevedore company is maybe a little more chintzy.
Well,
how much
they
equipment
have, you know,
they put out there?
Yeah, they can't.
Now, so what if the port is having the stevedore companies? If they had to take over, like, checker, supervisor, that kind of stuff, who is the port is actually hiring which longshoremen directly now? Mostly warehouse?
Yeah.
is the only direct hiring you're doing?
Well, in the Port of Tacoma, in the past, at Stevedore, you know, several operations, they Stevedore, well, they've been, we've been trying to figure out a way to handle that greasy, or I don't know what the hell the name of it is, you know, they've built things and they've tried water sprays and everything in order to handle it, and just, you know, haven't come up with the right answer. So they still indulge in this type of activity, but what I'm saying is, in the past, see, the difference between a stevedore and the port is that if the port makes a buck, that's, you know, they, you know, didn't hurt anything. The stevedore, they have to make you know, a hell of a lot more than a buck, because they've got the gear locker, they got supervision, they got, you know, whatever, and so, you know, they're just unwilling to take a gamble that would, you know, which would result in a possible loss of a dollar. And, you know, the fact that the ports are competitive, and that if, you know, and these boats float, and if they don't do, they get, you know, they're going to go where they can get the best, where they're going to get the best production, or the, you know, but, and also the best price for the production. You know, if they're charging, if we can beat Seattle by a shift, and the price is so damn much higher to do it here, what the hell good does it do us to beat them by a shift?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. The port's always been, you know, hand in glove with us, because we've gone out, they've stuck their neck out, and with us in their, you know, hand in gloves, because they figure, well, they may not make it now, or they can take a loss, if in the long run we can make it work. But that attitude doesn't prevail as it had, say, 10 years ago. United States, you know, the current managership is responsible for that, because they have take a piece of land on Pier 7, you know. If they can make so many bucks a year's time by leasing that piece out, then there's no gamble left for them. Just take that, and then you can, and the people that lease it can just do what they damn well please with it, see? So, whereas we might have been working for the port on end of Pier 7 and getting so many jobs a year, the new guy that has it, he may have, you know, he may be able to make a profit on it, but we're not making the money off it, we're not getting the jobs on it than we were for that reason. And that's happened. That's, a, you know, the landlord. See, there's Longview and Tacoma and part of L.A. that have this port stevedore companies, and those are probably the best three ports on the coast, and the rest of them are landlord type, and when you have the landlord type, you know, that you lose your production. We're the only port I understand on the whole coast that's got the same number of longshoremen we had, say, 15 years ago. Everybody else got less. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the reason, is that we work for the port an awful lot, but, you know, it's going away. They have the stevedore company handle the rubber now, packaging, recreating rubber and whatever. They have the Grace Lines always did come in and do themselves, but they're on the ports. They've this German outfit that was in here, I can't think of the name of it, and they've left now. They let them stevedore their own cargo, and they were continually unhappy with our production, and yet we checked our we made all kind of changes to get the best crane drivers possible, because that's where we felt we were losing the boat with our crane time. We find out that, you know, our crane time was better than most outfits. Who in the big ports, they have steady crane drivers, steady men. We don't have steady men, but we did create a crane board, you know, where the same guys would be driving on a more steady basis, and then we find that our number per hour was competitive with them, and still they were unhappy. So, you know, the Backy Line's been coming in here for 20 some odd years, and they're going to consolidate instead of stopping in Vancouver, Seattle, Everett, and here. They're going to stop in one place or there. They're in the process of deciding which port they're going to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been with them the longest, and sent them and probably loaded the bulk of their cargo. But our chances are probably no better than 50-50. And there again, one of the problems is that new commissioner we got, you know. we had an attitude, you know, that, you know, when you come to Tacoma, you're a prospective, you know, user of the port, but, you know, everything was good labor-wise. Along comes this O'Malley, and Jesus, he's, for, you know, weeks on end, or months on end, he's got a controversy going where other ports can say, hey, look, you don't have that sweetheart attitude in Tacoma that you once had. They got problems, and it's true, we do, you know.
Was that controversy O'Malley created directly with you guys, or was it just...
No,
he controversy, creates controversy over everything.
Well, he causes a controversy, on, you know, with management. And, you know, it's... he has a... He's a strong backer of conservation, and also he would like to see the people that obviously backed him in the election have ownership of land where the port has, you know, I don't know if the port operates on a bylaw and constitution type of thing, but they, you know, they have definite, you know, rules such as, you know, nothing on this side of 11th Street will be sold, and, you know, this and that, and then also they have some things that related to customs next door here that can't be done, you know. That, and for example, you know, a lot of these fencing that we've seen in the last 5 years is, you know, regulations, you know, put upon the port by customs or some
government agency.
Concern. Yeah, you know. In fact, that they tell us that someday, you know, we'll be parking down here and shuttled in. The reason I know a little bit about it is we're trying to buy a piece of land from them right now to move our hall, because we're in that dome area, and it looks like we're, you know, that's going to be the chosen spot, and so we're looking. We won't get the word till October 28th, and then they're to start construction downtown on July 1st, so we haven't got a large amount of time to get a piece of land and get a house built on it. Yeah, right. So I've been talking to Smith and Reed Jones. Lolly and I have been in there a couple times trying to get up. We're not real happy with the area that they've chose a place for us that is not really that bad, but we felt that, you know, there's always an alternative to everything, and we're looking for the one that it would be, and they don't seem to have one. And, you know, we feel that there's, you know, 20 some odd acres over in that one area, and they're giving us a corner out of it that if someone would suddenly come along and say, hey, we're going to bring in a 300-man crew and we want that piece right there, I'm sure that they'd say, you know, hey, we'll find another spot for you longshoremen, you know. So we're wondering, you know, where that is. We thought possibly over where they've traded Cascade out of this piece that we're on and moved them over there. We thought possibly right on the river next to that. But as I said, that's that deep water facility that's... been prescribed as the best available piece, and they don't want to see. When you deal with the port, first thing you come in, you talk about what you got in mind, and then they set down some criteria or some rules. Then when you start naming it, then, you know, like one of them with this deal was, hey, you know, we got some land, that's true, but we don't want to give a nip out of a big nice piece, you know. Well, so then when you find a spot that's available to you and centrally located, they say, well, hold it, you know, we can't give you a nip. Well, you know, if you wanted a piece right out of the face of the Milwaukee, you know, 3 acres right out on the face, you'd say, well, that, you know, I understand your point of view, because it's right on the face and it would screw everything up. Everybody would have to go around it. But when you pick a back corner of the goddamn thing and they've got a future 30 years down the road, they got a drawing that's going to put a mechanic repair place there, and you say, well, that's fine, how about next to it? And they say, well, we've got two more, that's the initial building, and they're going to put two more added expansions onto that in time. Well, then, you know, then the hell with their nip and tuck rule. In other words, they don't want you in there. But so far we're trying to get them to give us we know where they want us, and we know that it's not a bad place, but we were hoping that, you know, if something should come up, there would be an alternative and what it would be. You know, ideally, see, we would be down here along 11th Street, somewhere on this side of the Blair, because the Blair is in the books, that bridge is coming out, because it's a navigational block. and they'll either build a high-rise bridge over the whole damn thing, which is awfully expensive, or they'll go down and around. So we didn't really want to get on that side of the thing because we'd end up going down and around. So, you know, if mass transportation increases, and as it looks like it will, we feel someday we'll have to come to an area and be, let's say the government said got real sticky and had this area fenced off like they tried to get them to do. They've actually been fighting them off for the last few years not to do that. Well, we'd have to be, let's say we were working the grain and you had to park at 11th Street. That's, you know, that's you'd either have to give the guy 20 minutes to walk in and 20 minutes to walk out, which would knock 40 minutes off of your 8-hour day.
Yeah.
Or they'd have to shuttle you. So with that in mind, we're trying to move into, see, when we built where we were, we had about half of our work in the flats and half of our work out the north side, out to the smelter and the Dickman Mill and the grain and the Sperry's and that other place, whatever it was, and then the other half was down here. Now in that period of that our hall's been there since 53 or 4, whatever the hell it is, it's 90.
Everything.
Yeah, yeah. So that's where we want to move, but they have a lot of, we missed the boat. We were offered 3 acres and it's about 70 and we didn't buy it. And about for about 30 grand too, and we thought, well, what the hell, we like where we're at. So we missed the boat ourselves, but now we have to move. The only thing we got in our favor is that the city is obligated to help us relocate it if they take our site. And the city owns some property in this area. The utility department owns something down under those power lines.
Right, yeah.
And
transit company?
Yeah, well, they're just using that from the utility owns that whole section in there. That's that $52,000 area, an acre area that I was talking about. But from what I've been up talking to the city a little bit too, and the way I understand it, I'm not real sure about this, but it seems that the city's made up of a bunch of different departments. Some of them, like the park department, are going around all the time with their hand on them, got anything. But like the public utility department, they're like a big bear. They got, you know, they got all the money and they got everything going for them, you know. And so, you know, so there are powerful departments within the city, and then there are not so, you know.
Yeah.
So if you happen to be if you have to deal with the guy that's with an outfit that's got, I mean, if you go to Mike Parker and say, hey, we need a couple acres in the flats, and you're obligated to give us to us by referendum that was passed, well, that's fine, but he's got to go begging to the guy at the utility department if it happens to belong to the utility department. And the utility department are one of the lions of the operation, then you haven't got much going for you. But if it happens to be the park department that's always broke, you can just tell them, hey, we're taking, yeah, right. So that's the kind of a, well, we're kind of stuck right now between the port and the city.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, any cooperation, it isn't a, usually it's a, you know, when we have labor problems, it's a, you know, somebody gives and somebody takes, but we got our hat in our hand on this one because we got nowhere to go unless we're looking at Sears and Roebuck's parking garage. That's about the only thing left to us.
Well, the years that you've been here, how much has, I mean, there's been more containerization in the port in those years, you know, and more, you know, railroads and, you know, all of that mechanization stuff. How much has it changed since you've been here, and how has that changed, you know, the way that longshoremen do their work?
Well, It has changed considerably, but it's changed mostly to the guy that's trying to get into the organization or is young or new. A guy, when I come along, if a guy was just a good pole man, he'll work hard and, you know, and run site or whatever, then he had a really good opportunity to make the local. Or if you're a B-man, it didn't really matter whether you were actively trying to learn to drag winches or cranes or whatever, because they needed the hard working type on the other job. Now if a kid comes in and he's a real good hard worker in the hole, it's recognized, but a guy that can drive a Wagner and a Stradkerry in his first year here would be looked up to more favorably by anyone that has that job to do, to find people that have some talent. That's changed the most.
It's becoming a more skilled job.
Oh yeah, definitely. But to a person that's already, you know, been here or has, you still have your choice of, you know, the work's not so limited that you, I mean, I can go in the hole every day and work, and I can go drive something every day if I so chose. It hasn't changed so where there isn't any hole work. But to the guy that comes along anew, he isn't going to be judged as to be as good a man, you know, if he's just a hard worker. If he's just a hard worker, that they'll say, he's a dumb son of a bitch, but he sure works hard. But if he can drive something, then, you know, hey, that's a good kid, you know, that's a common outlook toward the guy. And that wasn't so, you know, when I first started here, it was just, they were just looking for guys to, you know, pump.
What about speed up?
Do I think that I've seen it since I've been here?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen it in relation to hiring less guys, but I haven't seen it to, when you say speed up, I think of, you know, make me 1930 or 1940, I'm thinking where they're telling, you know, hey, knock off the coffee break, or you don't have a coffee break, work right up to 12 o'clock. I don't think we've seen too much of that, the pushing part. But I'm sure that we've seen, you know, a bit of it for knocking jobs off.
I mean, machines just automatically speed things up, don't they?
Well, yeah. But, you know, they have, the ships we get in this port, you know, they work together. You're going to have, like, you've got five hatches working. You might have two robot gangs, which is all, you know, driving bulls, and then three regular gangs. And then, or maybe start with three robots and two regulars, and then before you leave, you'll end up with just, they'll cut off a gang or two, and you just end up with three regular gangs. You very seldom see a whole ship of just, you know, four robots. Maybe that's because we don't get that many real modern ships.
Yeah, the ship has to accommodate the robot as well.
Yeah, right. That's one of the things that that we're being forewarned about, this prospective Chinese trade. They so far, pulp looks like the biggest thing we're going to, you know, commodity we're going to ship. And St. Regis is even thinking that they may turn this mill into a export mill and just make a particular low grade of liner board, which we'd handle. But from the other ports that they've come into, such as St. New Orleans and I think L.A., they'll come in the first time or two with a real nice modern ship, and then the next time they'll come in with something, you know, about like we get here now from the Russians, and then they say down the road a ways after they get, see, they like an FOB contract, which means, free on board. In other words, they'll pay whatever the price is for the cargo, but they want it loaded, where other outfits will take just on to the apron, you know, and then pay for the stevedore and separate. Well, you know, the first two times you see the Chinese, they may have a nice ship and a pretty good ship, and then somewhere, and once they get their contract down the road, then they're going to bring, Taiwan Annie will come in here, chug, chug, chug. So they've been real skeptical about bidding. But that's one thing about our port, we have a lot of big cranes. So if they bid high enough, or correctly I should say, so that if they do get bad ships with, you know, a lot of decks in them or whatever in the future, that they could, you know, load whaleback style with cranes rather than rely on rickety gear from the gangs. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened to a couple of ports already. First ship that comes in is, you know, really great, and you just load it, and then they get their bid, and then the next thing that comes in isn't so hot. So
Maybe it's, the problem is the Chinese only have one good ship and they have to just keep
bringing
around
the ship. Yeah, right. Well, according to that guy that comes from St. Regis, he says that that's a real good way of measuring a company's growth pattern as far as export is concerned, because nowadays every damn thing is packaged. And that's true, they are. And if a company is buying a pretty good amount of cardboard or liner board or whatever you want to call it, and importing it, that's a good sign that they've got a lot, they've got something to export, you know. It's a pretty good, I guess it's right, from what other things I understand. And the Japs aren't buying a lot of, as much wood from us as they were. And the Russians cut the price $100 a ton, $100 a thousand, and they're buying more there. And then also, I don't think they're making as much pulp either. They've got a, you know, maybe they've got a union problem or what, but the Japs aren't shipping as much pulp as they were, and so the Chinese are going somewhere else to find their pulp. And initially we thought we were going to get paper fans and crap like that from them. Now it looks like, you know, pulp and industrial things that we have in our area might be attractive to them. So if we miss out on one thing, we might have a chance for something else, mm-hmm. which would set the industry back, I guess, if that's one way of thinking. You'd get back to the period that I've come from, which is the mixture between skill and hard work, factoring the whole. Mm-hmm. When Carter was going to come here last week, it was on national TV that he was coming, and one of the things that he was to talk about was the Chinese trade. And that they mentioned that Port Tacoma was probably the best suited port in the West Coast to handle this type of trade, because, and that's why he chose Tacoma, because we've got the, you know, dockside type support and facilities to handle what they do on the other side. You know, they don't.
They can't handle containers at all in China. I mean, barely. Well, as I understand it.
They sent a port commissioner over there, and he came back and gave us a big spiel, and it was pretty interesting. They said that they have a great railroad system, but they got a really crappy highway, and their docks are terrible. They don't have anything to hold a crane. You know? And when they load a ship, you know, or discharge a ship, they'll load from both sides. I mean, they'll bring a barge around one side, and they got them walking up one side or loading or hoisting, you know, one side and the other. They really put a lot of people. They're not really interested in anything that cuts manpower down. They're interested in something that create a little work. And that's the type of it. We have a lot of facilities and warehouse on the dock type thing. In fact, I think they're getting some pulp ready right now to go on that one of the ships that's coming here. St. Regis is going to put it over here between the houses and seven for the first one that's coming.
What do you think the future is for Tacoma? And given that the economy is not helping anybody's future.
Yeah, right.
Future.
Okay, just say that it stays like it is. Well, I think, you know, I think that the attitude here is good and better than places. I haven't been to too many places, but I do know that when we go to a meeting and other ports or in the region get together, that there's a different attitude between four or five of us and the other four or five, and seems to be the prevalent attitude in Tacoma and Aberdeen and Everett, is that, you know, we're trying to build a port. I'm sure Everett's much rosier future than ours because they lay in a real good spot. But we've always had to have, we have to have this attitude because of the sailing time involved round trip, you know. I'm sure that Seattle had the attitude we had, that Tacoma would be somewhat like Olympia has, you know, Seattle's got that. Seattle does there. It's so split on everything they do, they can't get together, apparently, and that, you know, and I guess they're just flat out of land. There's no room to expand. Portland's the same way, I guess. That, you know, I think we have a good future, and, you know, we have a good relationship with them. We have the type of management from PMA and the stevedore companies and the port that, you know, they're the type of guys just like we are that want to go home at night and lay their head in a pillow if everything is going pretty good. the thing that, you know, might bother me about the future is, wouldn't like to see it the same way Frisco is, for example. Say these guys all retire, because they're all older fellows, the head of the Stevedore, all except for one Stevedore. And the guys that represent the PMA out of Seattle, they're all older guys, you know, and so, you know, we're getting along well, and we have our own system in Tacoma. We're quite unique, and we, you know, we discipline our own selves, we keep, we have our own secretary, and we tell them what we're doing, and we handle our own funds, and we're solvent, whereas the other ones, they don't even handle it. This PMA handles everything for them. If they want pencils, they send them a few. We're the other way around, and the thing that, the only thing that bothers me is that in the near future there's going to be some change in personnel. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now say we get some 28-year-old hot dogs that are just out of Frisco or LA or something, and they say, hey, we've got, let it, you know, this is the way it says in the book, so this is the way we're going to do it. You know, in other words, the guys we got now, we can work with. If we have a problem, we sit down and we work it out one way or the other. But, you know, the only thing I worry about would be if we happen to get, I've seen the change that came from the port when we had a builder to a guy that's more interested in his stock report. And it would worry me a little bit that if the PMA and the stevedore companies were represented by guys that were maybe labor haters or book type, that we possibly could have a problem.
Now, I was talking to George and Phil, and I was, you know, talking to them about the M&M agreement and what that had meant, you know, at the time and over the years and stuff. And I got that this, well, George came right out and said it, that he thinks the union has now adopted the attitude that, especially on Manning, that this is it, no more cuts.
Right.
No more of this, you know, down to the bare bones stuff. That, do you think that's going to be easy to do? I mean, are you going to be able to do that without strikes, without slowdowns, without whatever?
Yeah, I think it will be, because see, the East Coast is, their Manning is far superior to ours in number, and that's where they held. And I'm sure that if we just adopt the same attitude and say, look and see, you know, that will prevail. And you have to understand, every time you go to the table and you want more, they're going to hit you with something. And this is the thing they've always hit us with. But Weyerhaeuser is separate now of the PMA, and in their ways of speeding up production, they haven't hit the Manning. They've offered the grapple, they've offered a couple other things, and each instance they were willing to handle the, not cut the crew, change the crew a little bit, but not cut the Manning. And if they are big enough and powerful enough, I'm sure that if, you know, that they probably set a precedent that we can, you know, stand behind. We do have some operations, you know, in the port where we're going to stay competitive with people like Puget Sound, that we're going to have the foreman or the checker doing more than just foreman and checking. But I don't think, you know, I don't think we're going to lose the foreman, and I don't think we're going to lose the checker. But we're going to have to become more expedient.
What would be the possibility of adding an extra person?
Well,
is that going to be harder
checker,
to do than holding the line?
If there's a blocker, a checker, and a foreman working, you know, normal, if we hold to our own way of doing things, the checker will check, the foreman will be the foreman, and the lift driver, instead of a blocker, he's going to drive the lift. But if we change a little bit, you know, then everyone will be doing something. Maybe the foreman won't be, you know, bribing the bull, but he may be doing some of the checking. The checking will be helping the lift driver, and we'll get the thing done. But, you know, if the thing picks up and we recapture some of the things that's lost, maybe down the road a year, that crew, instead of being basic three, will be basic five. So, you know, I'm sure that we're going to have to change. But hopefully, it'll be just from within our, you know, our, what our duties are, rather than what, you know, the Manning. Mm-hmm. We know we have to make some changes in that respect, because unless somebody comes in with a great big, you know, if we're gonna build anything, we're going to have to start work into it. Unless somebody comes in like Sealand and says, hey, I want that whole dock, and I want that 200 acres, and I want 50 men steady, you know. That doesn't happen too often. But if you're going to build something like
a lot of talk about those off warehouse, off dock warehouses, where they would bring in some stuff from the smelter from time to time and store it for them, and or bring some pulp in from warehouse and store it, or whatever the hell there is, and then when the ship comes, then it moves over from that off dock warehouse, rather than having to, you know, leave it at the smelter or leave it at St. Regis or whatever. And if we're going to handle that, then we have to have a different, you know, different chance. Because, see, one day they might bring nine truckloads. Well, then, God, then 3 days later they might have 25 trucks come. So, you know, we can't, any longer, we can't say, well, look, that dock or that house is going to have one foreman, one supervisor, one checker, and four bull divers. You're going to have to just go from day to day. And you know, and for years we never moved. Now they're talking, in fact, we've been the ones that initiated with the port, and that is to have a floating receiving area, you know. In other words, instead of everything having to come down here to 7 and then go back up to Pierce County, we'll just go down to Pierce County and receive the damn thing, you know. For years, you know, that was, they hell with it, you know. But those are the things we have to do in order to stay competitive. You know, it's move and change our. But as far you started asking me about that M&M. You know, I didn't come along in time for the M&M. But from what I heard, you know, it was a bad change for us to get this. How do you call it? PGP. But the PG, to me, the PGP is just one terrific insurance policy. But I had never seen a dime of it, and I never will. And I know all kind of guys that come from Frisco and that, and they're all talking about the 11 grand they got this year and the 15 they got the year before and this and that. You know, I never seen any of it all. As far as I'm concerned, some colored guy I never saw before, he gets the whole damn thing, I get nothing. But I know what it cost me an hour. It cost me, you know, a couple of years ago, it was 80 some cents an hour. Probably a buck an hour now.
That doesn't go somewhere else as a result.
Yeah, that's true. When you sit down and negotiate,
or something.
When you sit down and negotiate, the employer's got so much money to operate with, right? Okay, he's going to put, I think the last contract he put $29 million in the PGP. And then he put in, I don't know what, into wage increase in retirement plans and all that. Okay. If that $29 million wasn't going into PGP, the goddamn thing would be going in something else, wouldn't it? So directly, it cost me, like, you know, so many cents an hour to have PGP. Okay, that's why I'm saying it cost me.
Well, except you guys are the only lucky port on the entire West Coast that's never had to use it.
Well, we're one of the few, yeah, but as I said, that's the only good it does me. Directly is that it's a good insurance policy in the time that it could happen. But, you know, like, you know, I'm sure that some of the other ports have drawn it, but not a great deal. If you happen to be a night shoveler or some damn thing in Portland, you might be drawing it a little bit, but I think, you know, if you're just basically a longshoreman, I think Olympia might draw a bit of it, though. I'm not sure, because they got such a dead port.
Well, don't they also, after a time, don't they try to transfer guys out if the port, if after a long period of time, a number of people just aren't working?
Well, yeah, they have. But there again, there's loopholes, you know, in that, and there's loopholes in the other. It's, you know, it's not for me to say, but, you know, the thing is not administered in all in all cases. It's not administered by a presiding body. I mean, it's, you know, if there was a commissioner of the damn thing, mm-hmm. I'm sure that, you know, or something that effect, but it's a two-sided board, you know, and they just wouldn't argue, and if they don't resolve it, it's just hung, and if it's hung, it, you know, the money goes to, you know, that's been a resolution each and every year since they've had this thing to straighten up the, you know, make it a creditable deal. Mm-hmm. See, the only time it affects us is when it runs out of dough. At the end of 3 years, when it starts to get, well, to where the 29 million or whatever the hell it is starting to get down to 26 of it is already gone, and they're saying, well, we don't have enough to pay the PGP between now and the date of the expiration of the contract. Well, then it gets a little hairy. We get a little involved with the damn thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's about all we ever having to do with it, you know. But down in the ports, they use it a lot. You know, everyone hears the stories, you know. The guy only worked 400 hours all year, and he made 18,000, and, you know, things like that. So I'm sure that, you know, there's ways that you can gimmick it, that they don't work a lot of longshoremen on the weekends. They let the casuals, yet the casuals get a tremendous number of hours, mm-hmm. because something to do with the wording, you know, you only have to be available 5 days a week. So if you're available Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, well, then you've got your availability, and then Saturday and Sunday somebody else takes your job. But, you know, to me, coming from this court, doesn't make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. But you know, most guys don't feel like they're paying it directly. But when you think about it, that, you know, the employer puts out a certain amount of money, and at negotiating time, and where that's dispersed to, it's got, you know, some bearing as to how much your earnings are going to be able to, you know, how much biggest share is going to go to. I'm not trying to advocate that you get rid of the thing, because I say it's a hell of an insurance policy, but that's all it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, my only point was that being a port that's never really had to use it, I'm sure you guys have a see it in a different way than the guys in ports that do have to use it, where for them it's much more of an immediate thing.
Well, I'm sure in some of the poor, small ports, you know, Eureka and that, you know, it's a saver, because, you know, I don't know how often they get shipping, but, you know, I guess it's sporadic, you know. If the Japs quit buying logs or something, they're, you know, they're out and out, you know, they're hurting. Well, we're diversified enough that, you know, we all keep working. The bottom falls out of the log, it doesn't, you know, might affect the way I work, but it doesn't affect my income. I might have to, you know, make a job that I don't really rather not work on, but I still, mm-hmm. work is still there.
Have you worked with any of the women?
Yeah.
What do you think about women being on the waterfront, being longshore people?
Well, we've had gals for, you know, just for probably 5, 6, 7 years. In fact, we used to get gals whenever we had car ships, because, you know, figure they can drive as well as anybody, and they did well. But in a period of, we were trying to impress Toyota, we were doing a lot of running, you know, they weren't too good at that, but they could do that well. And from time to time, we've had them on, had them come down on when they were in groups that were striking, and we tried to discourage them, but they did get a job or two, and they selected, you know, they selected a spot they could handle. But then in the last 4 years or so, we've had some on a regular basis. Among them, the two that we got for B persons, and I'm not too happy with the fact that we had them, because I think we leaned over backwards to take other groups, such as, you know, there's a certain number of Indians in our county, 8% or something, and we've steadily taken more of our colored people, a lot more. I don't know what the relation, the percentage is in color.
George thinks it's 12 to 15.
Well, anyway, I'm sure we took, you know, our share. But with the gals, I don't know, I'm not particularly fond of the two that we have, but I don't know them, but I make a point not to know them, I guess. I talk to them, I call them by their name, I don't call them by any, you know, nicknames that they've acquired already. I would have liked to have seen them overlooked when they did take the B bench. And not so much because they're women, but they're not too fond of this particular pair. I see them in other ports, and I see they travel in upon occasion. The gal from San Diego, for one, makes a hell of a representative for a group. I doubt that I'd be ashamed to travel to Seattle with the pair we got and work with them. I don't think they're very, you know, but I don't think that's what you're asking. No, you're asking me what I think about women in general.
Not necessarily individual.
Okay, well,
women,
I, 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 um, I'm not opposed to working with them, but I think the reason that they're here now is not the longshoremen's fault, but I think it's the casual's fault. And I'm sure, and I've seen this before they made the local, was that they would go down the job and be in the hatch on a tough job, and the casuals went ahead and did their goddamn work for them. And many occasions they figured, hey, they're useless, just get them out of the way, we'll do it. In other words, I'm talking about a crew that's got six in it and you're on pulp, or you got eight in it and you're on sacks. They didn't do their work, they weren't capable of doing that type of work, but they got a good amount of tonnage that day because the casuals packed them. Longshoremen wouldn't pack them. They just said, get out of here, you know, we don't want her, give us somebody else, or move her to the dock or do something. But the casuals didn't do that because they don't have the authority in the hatch to move her. See, the way we work is a side runner runs the hatch, the hatch tender runs the whole goddamn operation, and in some instance the walk-on boss is just a go-between. But when you get casuals or B-men or whatever, and the foreman is God, and the hatch tender is more interested in form four than he is the job, and so the foreman becomes more powerful and he runs the show. But when you have all longshoremen on the job, when you got A men on the deck and you got A and B men in the hole, it's a little different. That you go back to the old way, which is the side runners are down there and they're telling the hatch tender what they want, and the hatch tender, he's run the whole show, and the walking boss, he loves it because he doesn't have to do a damn thing, and this is the way it was intended in the first place. That's now in Seattle, they're running off the bull list. The guy on the dock, he sets the pace, he brings the load under the gear when he damn well pleases. Mm-hmm. Here the hatch tender is the big man, but he still listens to the, you know, he's still taking suggestions or sizes or whatever out of the hole. So I say the reason, you know, the reason that these two gals, for example, got enough hours to be considered to end up making the damn thing, in my opinion, is that the casuals packed them because they're unauthoritative, and they're not going to step on anybody's toes, and you wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. I didn't either when I was a casual. So they packed them. So now they say, well, Jesus, they were on this job and they were on those jobs, and I guess they did it. We got our, you know, quotas or whatever, in, our tonnage and whatever in. But from what I've seen of them, you know, they just sit on their dead butt.
Well, do you think
this pair? There are other gals.
Do you think women, if you just take women as in general a category, are capable of doing the work? And they're always going to be some people.
Yeah, a big
who aren't
gal is. Yes, a big gal is. If a gal goes, 160 pounds or something, she's, you know, I don't say she has to be so tall, I think that she can do the most of the work, yeah. From what it's changed to what it is now, yeah. But you take some little thing, no, I don't. So if you want me to, if I can generalize and say, hey, if she's a good sized gal, I say yes. If she's not, I say she can't.
Well, I have some of the retirees I met, like Lee Barker and Martin Peterson, they only weighed about 140 pounds, did then.
Uh-huh.
And they did the work.
Uh-huh. I'm sure. I know of both of them, and so I'm sure that they did, you know, and Johnson and a whole bunch of them. But I've seen some of the little gals that the unemployment have sent down there, and possibly if they did sack work for a year or two, they'd harden up to the point where they could do it too. But initially, when I see them come down, they can't, no. I'm not saying they couldn't, you know, get muscled
well,
up enough to do it.
Well, I would agree if someone has not done that kind of work. Hard physical work.
You take the same
guy, the first
same.
Few times.
You take the same guy, and he's the same age, and he's a naturally 175-pound kid that stands 5'10". He could probably get through the day and do something. You know? But the gal isn't. Mm-hmm. Now they've had a couple of gals that look like they could, work for the garbage department and load trucks, but I haven't seen them. It seems like every time I see one, she's either driving a car or she's too small to do anything.
Do you think, would you like to see more women coming in, or would you like to see women encouraged to try? Would you rather it just sort of, well, if someone shows up, we'll let her try, but we're not going to go out?
I'm not happy about having any. But as long as they come into the organization and do what we do, you know, that would be acceptable to me. But I hate to see it get to the point where they're going to take in
they got, figure they got to take 12 girls, say, out of the next 100. So, okay, we're going to make lift drivers and checkers out of them. If they come in and do the same thing that they're doing with these two initially, do everything and work out of the pool, and I don't have any more objection to them as I would if they have to put on four colored, or four Indians and 12 colored guys. But I would be very objectionable to if they were to bring them in and select some checking, you know, or select some bull driving. As long as they go through the system and are graded out, say right now, from the short time that these two gals are in there now, and I had the say, I would say keep the one and get rid of the other one. So one of them is acceptable to me, and she's only been a B person for how long, 3 months or something. But I'm rather opinionated, as you can probably tell. And so, you know, as long as they don't have any, see, the fear is that when we go to get rid of one of these gals, because she ain't worth a damn, or she's a bum, or whatever, but the judge is going to say, hey, well, you know, you should have been taking these gals for years, and you haven't, so what can she do? Well, she checks. What has she done? She's checked, and she's drilled bull, and she's worked sack, she's worked pulp, and she's loaded lumber, and they say, well, what did she, how did she do on the pulp, and terrible, what sack's terrible, what's she doing on the checking? Oh, okay. Well, what did she do on this? Oh, okay, well, then he'll say, okay, from now on, she checks, and she does something else. So now, when I get 55, and it ain't that far away, and I want to be a checker after being a whole man for 20 years or something, then it's not going to be available to me. You know, I see it in other industries all the time. You go up here on the road, and they got some guys working on the road, and there's a little gal at one end with a flag, and a little gal at the other end with a flag. Now, I used to drive through that same area, and there was an old guy that had been there 40 years, and he had his old hand all crippled up, or he couldn't walk good, and he was out there with a flag making a buck, but now you don't see him because, hey, they got a little girl in there because they got to have a girl on the job, and she can wave a flag. So the same thing is going to happen to me, I think, when I get restricted as to what I can do. That's happened to that guy over there. You know, he gave him 30 good years, and now he screwed up a little bit, and he could wave the flag. But no, we got to have so many women, so we got a little girl, and he's home doing nothing, making nothing. So if they come in and do what I do, you know, work everything, and then when they're accepted into membership, then they got the choice to go do any specified thing they want. If they want to just check, well, that's great. As long as they come in and you know, and work and follow the pattern that's set, and I have no objections whatsoever. And I'd hate to see 12 of them every time, but you know.
Has the local ever had any suits brought against it for affirmative action? Not just women, but blacks or anything else, or any consent decrees, or has it always been voluntary?
Well, we have some problems with suits right now, but I don't think they fit in the affirmative action category. We have some injury on the job problems, and it's my opinion, or guess is that, you know, the reason we've got two gals for the first time is that the threat of that. But as far as being sued, you know, we've been sued for getting rid of people. We're being sued for that. We're being sued, and the threat of being sued over myself getting rid of a couple of guys, you got two or down the road, is there. But I don't believe we have had any problems. We have had a problem, and we're ordered to cooperate, and we did. But the information that the person wanted was so, God, it's such a demanding order that we couldn't do it. I mean, this particular person is a Chicano that we got rid of, and after several occasions screwing up, drinking mostly, they then filed with the National Labor Relations Board, and when it got down to a determination by them on a regional basis, they went our way, but then it was appealed to the national, and they don't know how it's come along, but it's been involved. They've been involved for a long time. They then asked how many
Chicanos or ethnic groups have we had? Well, we were able to count our people and tell you, well, look, we of the people that we have, this is our ratio. Mm-hmm. But then the guy wanted us to go back for 2 years and give them the nationalities of everyone that had worked out of our hall, regardless of whether they were registered persons or not. Well, Jesus, we get people every day that walk in there out of nowhere, or the unemployment office sends us something like 1,000 different people on their list. Jesus, we don't ask them what nationality they are. It was an impossible task that, you know, how could we go? We can tell you how many hours our people worked and how many of them are colored and how many of them are Iranian or whatever else you want to know, but to find out in a two-year period what the relationship or nationality is of everyone that worked casual, because this person was a casual, they were more interested in what the nationalities of the casuals were. We just told them, gee, you know, how can we answer a question like that? You know, and it looked to me like it's I don't know how long that board has been in existence, but it looked to me like the guy didn't have anything to do with looking for, it was a little bit of an unrealistic, so we figured, hey, we'll take our chance in court, mm-hmm. because, you know, I don't think anyone could, you know, that'd be an endless chore. Mm-hmm. We do it, you know, not now, but we were hiring a hell of a number of casuals from all walks of life, you know, knights. Anybody that walks in there at night can get a job, if there's a job, if we need them, you know. Yeah. And to run down their nationalities is Jesus Christ. Whew. We take two guys a year to get all that. Yeah. You know, for the sake of determining whether the guy is a screw-up or not on the job, you know. If we're wrong, we'll have to pay the guy, but if we're right, you know, he's down the road. And the nationality of everybody else that works should have no bearing on whether this guy's a drunk or not. I mean, mm-hmm. that was our attitude. So it was a pain to us. But you know, I can't say that we've been sued. We've gotten involved in the National Labor Relations Board's rulings because of one particular character. But that's.
Mm-hmm. What about inside the union? Has there, to your knowledge, has there ever been any problems? Say coming from the blacks or something, feeling that there was any kind of discrimination or
I can't even say I can ever
employers or
no. We've had a problem with a foreman or two, and they made maybe a formal protest, and I think, and it was handled from within where they gave the guys some probation because of it. I can't even remember where the blacks in our local voted in a block. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Say, you know, come and try to get a guy in, or I'm sure that they know guys that they get along with that are white, and they know guys that they don't get along with that are white, and then they have, but we were real fortunate to have a fellow by the name of Wardell Canada that, you know, was active in the union and had a good head on his shoulders, and he's gone, retired now, but no one has really stepped forward, and so we have just a occasional guy will, you know, be on a, there's strong committees within the union, and there's other committees that don't do much. Like a casual committee is a strong committee. We've had color guys on that so they can share in the representation. We get a good turnout of the color guys at the union meetings, but Jim Barnett was a treasurer for 2-3 years, as long as he won. I don't think he re-ran. So we've had officers, and we've never had a business agent, or we've never had a president, but then we've only had a couple business agents, and couple presidents in the last umpteen years anyhow, so it's not a year-by-year change. I can't even, and I haven't missed a meeting since I've been a member, I don't believe that I've ever seen the colored guys even vote in a block over an issue. Just they seem to be like, you know, they come in and if you're a gang man and it looks good for the gang, you vote gang, and if it doesn't, you aren't, you vote the way it hurt, you know, you vote the way it helps or hurts you, and that's the way it's, I've seen it since I've been here.
Okay. Yeah, I guess the last thing I want to ask you is in terms of the union itself and whether you've seen, you know, in the years you've been here, because when you came in, Bridges was still mm-hmm. was still the president. You went through the 71 strike.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whether you've seen the union change,
the local union or the international,
both on both levels.
Oh,
you know, there's a saying, you know, I don't think my local's changed yet. The guy's changed, but the local, I don't think, has changed. You know, there's a saying, you never get better, you just get worse. And I'm sure that that's what I've seen. When I was casual, I worked my ass off on every job I got. When I was a B man, I began to call my shots. Now I'm an A man, I'm not as good a worker as I was when I was a casual. I'm not as good a worker as I was when I was a B-man. So I've seen that happen among the guys that I'm the closest to. But that's true of everyone, you know. But the system itself in our local, not the way the union runs not the way the union function itself, but the way the work is, that the work is, the attitude is, get the work done. That hasn't changed. The working of the union itself, it's always been, it's to a degree, who we are. That's not predominant, but it doesn't hurt you any, I mean, there's the good guys and the bad guys, but it was always that way, But as far as the work is concerned, it's pretty much the... You get your opportunities. They're made by yourself. If you want to, you do what you want to do. If you want to show up, you show up. As far as the international is concerned, I think they have made more change than we have. They haven't heard, haven't heard us because we're kind of more independent than the other locals, but. I wasn't as aware of, like this problem between the checkers and the union and the longshore division has gotten bigger and bigger, and I don't know if they're ever going to resolve that. But that seems to be a big, has come to the top. A lot of time is concerned with not logs and problems with logs, but problems with checkers who are our own people, So that change in the international has been, and that's been brought around by the change in the administration,
Mm-hmm.
But there again, we've got a better system where they come from, they're not a separate group. They don't have their own identity there within us. In other ports, they're a different group and they feel like they're different or something. Like the checkers are in Seattle are like foremen are in Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
They're separate. They're named in the same building in that. And I think that change is now predominant in the whole international. So that in that way it's different.
I just had a question. It slipped my mind.
You said the last one was the last one.
Oh, I know. No, just one more. One. I wanted to know what you see as, say, for the Tacoma longshoremen right now, what is the biggest concern, the thing that's the most on people's minds or that they're most worried about or that they would see as the biggest, say, threat to their, their union or their job or is there anything? Is everybody happy and there's no problems?
No, I don't think anybody's worried about it. They keep the projection for our port is always good. You hear it from the port and you hear it from other sources that you have a good port and this and that. So but of course we have our seasonal ups and downs. We always have, and last winter we felt that we heard that they were going to close Pierce County and consolidate in Pier 4, and that one was, the Army wasn't up to snuff enough for the Army or whatever, and that and this that. And those are all signs that, things aren't so good. But, and then we have a system up there, it's a rack with a bunch of holes in it where we store the slips, and you can see some periods of the year where all the racks are full with pads, and then you see it narrowing down to where you are, and then they're about this thick instead of this thick. So
you see, well, you can just look at the previous year and see that the things aren't as good as they were last year or last fall or whatever, you know. So that might become a concern from time to time, but it seems like, you know, soon that there's always something to replace. But if we do lose one and we've lost a few cargoes like everybody else, they seem to have something in mind, you know. Right now we're close to getting a Korean outfit on Pier 7 where Tote moved out of, and then there's some kind of a scrap operation going on Pier 1, and that's new, and so, you know, it seems like it comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, you know, it's not all coming in. The only thing that worries me is that the way we tend to business. The guys, you don't have to work as hard as you used to. So you've gotten guys that drive and have some skills, that, you know, that's the type of guy you look for. But when it gets right down to doing the hard work, we don't have the guys that were as dedicated or what type of guy, you know, he doesn't. We have a lot more money than we used to have, and, you know, it's it reflects on a lot of things, you know. Guys that used to throw a buck in the middle of the table at lunchtime for a couple pitchers of beer, a buck a piece, you know, now they got money in their pocket, they can get a bottle of whiskey and get stoned if they want to, and that's one way, one change. And the other is that, you know, the guys don't really give a damn about getting a ship, you know, like maybe we'll have the first ship from a certain line. We used to really go out and really give them what we could, you know, stay on the job and what. Now it's, you know, the guy's more interested in his 4-4. I mean, I'm as bad as anybody.
Say that again.
I am, but I mean, that's just part of, you never get better, you just get worse. You know, and I think that the longshoremen we got today, you know, aren't the longshoremen that we had 10 years ago, and probably that was true of the ones 20 years ago too. They're more highly skilled, that's for sure, but you know, they're just not as good a, you know, the attitude was from the time when we didn't have any work until we got plenty of work, that was the attitude that built the port as far as longshore was concerned, and I don't think that we've got that type of guy today that we had, you know.
True.
We
got
the type
it.
Of guy that when we didn't have anything. But there's a lot of guys, you know, that's one thing, there's a lot of guys. That's why our system works so damn good, I think, in our port, you know, like when a guy's young and he's got a couple kids and they're young and he wants, you know, he's buying a house and whatever, he has to work a lot. And when you work a lot, you're not going to get the better job. The guy is a little older, got something paid for, or doesn't have all the dreams left or whatever, he can select a position and work 5 days a week or straight days or whatever he wants to. You don't have to take everything that comes, and therefore you get older and slow down, you can get a better spot, or you have the seniority to get you a better spot. And the young guy, you know, packs the load. And, you know, that it's a system that no one sat down and figured out. It just worked that way, and it works real well with us, and that's why we, you know, it just fits good here for us. You can't sell Seattle on it because they won't buy it, or anybody else that doesn't have a good port. But it was that attitude that when they had nothing and they built it up to what they, not to what we have now, but what they got, which was probably by 65, they really had something going. It was that attitude, and it was that thing that, you know, but a lot of our older members go back into that, you know, they were part of it and they're still here. But it was that attitude that we're lacking a little bit, and that's the only thing, you asked me what worried me or what, and it's that business about building a port. It's only with the older members, which I'm not a member of that group either, but that's the intangible thing that we're losing, you know. Like when hatch tenders used to be on the job all the time and they ran the crew, now the foreman, what the hell, you know, the foreman, he's getting stronger than, he's a company representative, it's that. But I would think that, you know, say the economy really went to hell and we didn't have a lot of shipping and it got right back down to where just A men were working or just A and B men were working, that there's enough of that attitude in our local that it would come back. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the one thing that we've lost. I don't say we're not competitive, but we, you know, that if it was, you know, because we've been close to losing two or three items, and we buckled our belts and got, you know, the South Fed over here that left aren't the only ones that have threatened to leave, you know. But, and there'll be others leave in the future, I'm sure, but, you know, the guys have usually been able to figure out a way to, you know, keep the cargo coming, because that's, you know, where our bread and butter is.
What's your position?
In the union?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a trustee.
Trustee.
And I have quite a bit to do with the building corporation. I'm the president of the building corporation. And
that's a separate legal entity, the building corporation.
We're a separate identity, but it's the board consists of three trustees and a vice president and a treasurer. So we're kind of a group of the lesser lights. We have to do with just about everything that's left over, anything, like if it's contractual, it's Labor Relations Committee handles it. If it's, anything, the president has to do with everything. He's over everything. And we get a lot of everything from the Christmas party and the picnic to blood bank.
The catch-all committee.
Yeah, we get everything, right. Anything that isn't specifically, you know, belonging to one particular group, we end up with it.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess I don't have any more questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes.